everybody. How's it going? It's been a minute or two or maybe three. I'm really glad to be back with Doc Talk with Carol Martori, and I'm glad to be sitting in front of the microphone here at K-Chung Radio, 1630 AM, and I look forward to chatting for the next, 50 minutes I've got here. And, you know, a little bit stream of consciousness today. And as you guys know, I've been a documentary editor for 15 years, actually 17 years. I should say 17 years. And it's been a great ride. We've been able to work on all kinds of different amazing projects with lots of different great people, creatives. And I've been in kind of like an interesting space over the last few years. And I don't know, just kind of wanted to reflect on that and talk about some of what's been going on and think about it and maybe share some things. Maybe you'll dig it, maybe you won't. I don't know. I'm just really right in a space where I'm just trying to figure some things out. I recently turned 50 as well, and so it's just one of those, you know, moments. It's that midlife moment, or actually even beyond, a little beyond midlife, let's be honest. And just lots of great things happening, but also maybe trying to figure out how to move forward in the next chapter. And in doing that, I just kind of want to, I was like thinking about things on my drive over here to K-Chung. For those of you who've never been here, K-Chung Radio is kind of one of the most unique spaces I've ever been in. It's in Chinatown over this restaurant, Pho 87. And to get here, it's this very precarious red stairway up the back of this building that honestly, every time I walk up it, I think I might, you know, one of the stairs might just literally give away and I'll fall to the ground injured and maimed. Disturbing. I know. I'm sorry. I'm painting a picture here. I'm a storyteller. What can I say? And then you walk down these hallways, these kind of dirty hallways with mashed, dirty carpet that honestly I don't think has been cleaned in the last 30 years. No lie there. Not even exaggerating. And you walk up the stairwell and into this space that has murals all over the walls, a chalk wall with multiple messages, just mismatched chairs and desks and couches. And right now we're having an extreme heat wave in Los Angeles. It's just, you know, sweltering out. And I'm in the studio, I'm in this little space, and it's behind these glass doors, and literally have five fans over me, and they're not cooling. It's literally pushing around hot air. And at the same time, I wouldn't want to be anyplace else. I love being here in front of the mic, putting this down for y'all, and being in this really unique, wonderful, creative space. There are strange posters and sayings and stickers everywhere. A poster I'm looking at says, "I say no to everything." another one, nihilist, writing herself, Beta Main. It's a free workshop going on. Pun Yang. stop Bannon. But it has been amended. Now it says stopped Bannon. Yay. Gotta love that. So all kinds of cool little things to look at and muse on and think about in this interesting, most interesting of spaces in Los Angeles. And so, yeah, what's been going on with me, documentary editor for the last, like I said, 17 years. So for the last, I was looking at my IMDb the other day, and it seems as though I haven't worked on anything for the last 3 years, which the internet, you know, it's faulty. The internet is faulty. It paints a faulty picture at best. And truth be told, I've kind of done nothing but work for the last few years. And that's something I've been mostly reflecting on, is this constant stream of work, which is so blessed and beautiful and awesome. And I honestly like put that out to the universe, and the universe provided. And I've had great, you know, projects to work on, and some, you know, not so hot. But I have worked in a way that I think is like not serving me anymore. And I think that's kind of where I'm at. And I kind of think it's interesting that like not only is it not serving me, I'm literally not seeing the fruits of that labor. And generally what that means for people in the film industry, as all of you guys know, is credits. You get credited. I mean, that's a beautiful thing about, you know, this industry is you get credited. People see it. It's there. It's like hard and black and white, which like, you know, so many people out there working are the kinds of jobs don't get that credit they deserve. And you know, listen, it's not perfect by any means. There's lots of things I've done over the years for films that I've never been credited on. Some things I haven't done that I have been credited on, you know, vice versa. So it's definitely not perfect, but it is generally like at least we have that, and so many people out there don't. And I honor that. I believe in that. I work towards that. And maybe I shouldn't be. You know, I don't know. Like, that's one thing I'm kind of, like, questioning this whole notion of, like, seeking credit, too. What does that even really mean? Why am I so dead set on that? Shouldn't I really be seeking great art and great artistic projects to work on? And, you know, my view has shifted over time, and my desires have shifted over time. And maybe that in and of itself is kind of, you know, not serving me as well. And so I think, like, these things are just kind of rolling around in my brain, and I'm kind of just thinking about how I've been working, like I said. And there's a few, you know, just projects that have been happening, two in particular, or actually one that kind of started this whole thing off, this kind of chapter where I'm thinking about no credit. And I worked on this project, this documentary on electronic dance music. It's called What We Started. And I worked on that project for 9 months. And that project premiered this year at the Los Angeles Film Festival. And it starred Martin Garrix and Carl Cox. And I worked really hard on it. I worked pretty much 6 days a week. 12 to 15 hour days. I worked with a great team of other editors and people who just worked tirelessly to try to bring that film together. And, you know, at the end of the day, I took it up to a certain point, and I took it up to the 9 month point. And I personally, by that point, the directors and producers screened it for people, and they all realized it needed a lot more work in order to really do well out there in the world, which I didn't disagree with. I certainly agreed with. But by that point, I was I had another project to go to, and I also was literally physically and emotionally exhausted. There had been a lot of pressures to get that into the film festival circuit, you know, Sundance, South By, and we didn't make it. And so there was a lot of pressure and a lot of anxiety and constant expectation to work harder and harder and harder. And as I look back on that now, that kind of constant barrage of work and that intensity, you know, didn't really pay off. It didn't really pay off. And now what's happened is I haven't seen the film, and I really very much, the film was, you know, completed by another team of editors, and I very much look forward to seeing it. But they're all credited. And, myself and the people that, my team that I worked with, we were not credited, at least in terms of the IMDb, such as it is. Whether or not we actually have credit on the actual physical digital file itself, it remains to be seen. But I understand why maybe on a certain level the director chose to do that. I don't agree with that, since I am sure the work that we put into that film is probably still in that film. But I can understand that person's frustration. Yet at the same time, I made the choice, too, to work as hard as I did and not push back in a certain way and try to carve out a maybe more healthier and a more beneficial for the film work situation. And I find myself getting into that over and over again, where I work 12 to 15 hour days and I'm not pushing back enough, and creating or working in situations that are maybe to the benefit, ultimately, of the film. You know, like, not even, you know, I'm going to take myself out of the equation for a second, but ultimately for the film, you know, working on a level of professionalism that serves the film. A good documentary is really hard to make. I saw Icarus the other day, and I thought they did a wonderful job. I think, like, for my taste, it's a bit long, and it's almost like two films in one, which in some ways works, in some ways doesn't. I think the first part could be cut down a bit. But I really thought it was great. And when I looked at the end, I saw how many people were involved. There were multiple editors, additional editors, a writer, the director, many producers. There were many people involved in that project. There were consulting editors and, you know, people overseeing it. And these are people who are very high-level people, people who have done docs that are Academy Award nominated. And I'm reflecting on that trend. I'm really thinking about that. And I'm really thinking about the teams it takes to make documentaries. And documentaries are getting better. They're getting more sophisticated. They may be taking a tact where there are maybe less and less documentary-like, or what we know of or think of as documentary. They, in a certain way, are becoming more fictional narrative structure. I see that over and over again, which certainly makes for more entertaining and compelling cinema. Is it truth? I mean, I can tell you from behind the scenes, truth is certainly being manipulated quite a bit. And I want to say that, yes, we're trying to maintain the spirit of truth and the essence of what happened. You know, I want to believe that we do that, and I hope that in many ways people do and they stick to that. But I also know that I do see a trend in that we, you know, as documentaries become more and more popular because of video on demand and the fact that we are getting distributed across all these different platforms and people have more access to documentary, people are becoming more, you know, sophisticated in their viewership and their demand for higher quality documentary films. And what it takes to make one of those films is a lot. You know, you get dumped 100, 1,000 some odd hours of footage. It takes a lot of time to go through that. And the more time and care you put in going through that, generally, you know, especially if you have a good team, the better that film is going to be. And by good team, I mean some people who can handle going through that kind of material, people who can handle ultimately breaking that down and finding a story and carving a story out of that kind of material, that scope and amount of material, which is, you know, difficult to do. And experience helps you really digest that and figure out ways to break that down more easily and approach it in a way that, you know, helps you find kind of the core storyline through that. But a lot of times, you know, let's all be honest, like, their time is money, and people want you to work faster and faster and faster, and so that requires greater manpower, generally, and bigger teams, and more people to kind of oversee and get at the essence of these stories, but also to kind of, you know, just do the hard labor of editing these things down. So I've been on situations where we'll have a lead editor and then you'll bring in additional editors, and it's our jobs as additional editors to just literally cut scenes, you know, and I don't necessarily have the big picture in mind at that point, but my job is just to focus on 1, 2, 3, 4 scenes at a time. And then it's another person's job to really oversee the bigger picture, you know, and weave that together and make sure that the scenes I'm working on and the other editors are working on are melding together and maintaining the threads that carry through the whole narrative. That's largely how TV gets made. That's largely how we did it when we did Gangland. You know, we had multiple editors on a episode because we had only 3.5 weeks to cut that episode. So I would take a couple acts, another editor would take another act, we would flop back and forth, we would keep working on scenes, you know, and exchange those, and then ultimately they would coalesce into an episode. ultimately, I think in 3.5 weeks, pretty quickly, actually. You know, we also had a producer who was a writer. We had AEs who were researchers. We had a graphics team. We had a composer. So we had many, many people at our disposal to work on things and make these things happen, you know, quite quickly. So it was great. And it taught me how to work maybe on a certain way more efficiently and effectively. I feel more and more that model is coming into traditional documentary. You know, people don't have years to work on these projects anymore. But oftentimes it takes that kind of time to make a better project. It takes thought. You have to think about these things. You have to digest them. You have to kind of come to terms with your subject matter and start to question it and see it in a different light. And it takes you putting together scenes sometimes and seeing what that means and then to pull back from that and realize, you know what? This isn't actually what this film's about at all. This film is about this, this, and this. And that takes, you know, lots of conversations and thinking and reworking. And it's art. You know, in many ways, I still think of it as an art form and a way of producing something that has a deeper level of meaning, and I hope that. But, you know, there's these other things, too, which is life. How do you carve a life out of this moment? How do you maintain a sense of self, and how do you, you know, have a full life and have this job that is rather demanding, and a job that, like, I find oftentimes I'm carrying lots of tension and anxiety. That's tension and anxiety of timelines. And I don't just mean the timeline in front of me, although that's part of it, but it's the very real timeline of having that deadline in front of you. And in my world, that generally means deadlines of film festivals. And of course, everyone wants to get into Sundance. Everyone does. That's just the standard. You know, no one's coming to me and saying, you know, I'm just really thinking of getting into South By. I'm cool with that. Or, hey, you know what, Carol? I'm not even thinking about a festival. I first and foremost just want to make the film good. Generally, it's like, I want to get into Sundance. And generally, that deadline is absolutely insane. Hands down. And I've actually heard this from many other editors. It's like, literally, like, this is what people do. And listen, we all have to have a goal. And generally, I'm like, okay, let's try. Let's try to get into Sundance. Let's do that. Which is kind of insane when you think about it. You're literally like saying, yeah, I'm going to try to get into the Olympics. I've never done it before. I haven't even exercised in 5 years. But I'm just going to try to get into the Olympics doing this crazy sport. What do you think? It's kind of like that a little bit. You've done this sport. You've done it for a long time. I haven't ever done this sport, but what do you think? I had a guy come to me the other day, and he wanted to edit a film on Fellini in 4 months. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. It's going to take you a year. He hasn't called me back. Needless to say. And I'm not surprised. And I'm, you know what? I'm so okay with that. I'm so okay with that, you guys. Like, I'm 50, and I'm okay with that. Because I'm done. I am done killing myself for projects. I'm so over it. I'm literally kind of at my wit's end at it. I work hard, and I love it, and I'm passionate about it. But I don't know. I can't do crazy anymore. I'm super, super duper drawing that line and the sand over it. Okay, I think I kind of need to, like, break this up since this is getting a little bit intense. I'm going to play some music. I'm going to try to find a track that is maybe documentary related, something I've worked with. For the love of God, Time Warner Spectrum, stop showing up on my screen. I've worked with, like, so many awesome musicians and artists on these projects, and it's been a lot of fun, and yeah, it's been great to kind of, like, you know, really just kind of delve into that. world a little bit and figure out what music making is all about. I'm going to play some music from a doc series that I absolutely love. And this is like quintessential, like fabulous documentary filmmaking. And this is quintessential composer of documentary films, Philip Glass. This is from Koyaanisqatsi, the Kotsi series, this three-part series. This is from 1989. This is the intro, opening, signature track of that series. So I'm going to go ahead and play that for y'all. In a second. This is obviously... There we go. Sorry, I told you guys, it's been a while. So, you know, that generally means I'm a little rusty. All right. Here we go. Koyaanisqatsi. Thank you. opening track, Koyaanisqatsi. That was shifting into another track, Organic. Part of my life is always searching for new music, always trying to find scratch track that I can work with on the next project. And I had downloaded this because I'm working on the Bethany Hamilton documentary. For those who you don't know who Bethany Hamilton is, who there might be a few of you out there. She is a professional surfer, an amazing woman, amazing person, who I am learning through this documentary, just an incredible athlete, like beyond. And at 13 years old, she was literally on, she was a young phenom, she was on her way to becoming a world champion surfer. And she was out surfing one of her home breaks in Kauai, Hawaii, and about a mile or half a mile or so off the coast at this break, tunnels. She was out waiting for a wave, and her left arm was bitten off by a 15-foot tiger shark. And many things, articles, newspaper stories, Hollywood movie have been made about her. And I'm having the privilege of working with Aaron Lieber right now on this project. And he is this amazing surf filmmaker, cinematographer, who's done a lot of great projects and has done a lot for women and surfing in particular. And this is his signature project. I think this is, you know, his biggest project to date for sure, and one that has just great, great potential. And Bethany gave a lot of access to him, and they were also able to just film her showcasing her extraordinary athleticism in a way that is just truly remarkable. So I look forward to that getting out there. But back to process, back to thinking about working in ways that are more effective in a certain way. Thinking about credit and meaning and purpose and what's the next chapter. Like I said, this year has been one of no credit, you know. So after the EDM documentary, I worked on a film about Instagram. I took a role more as a writer on that one, and I wasn't in the hot seat, so to speak. I wasn't working those 12 hours days. I was trying to find a way to be a bit more balanced, per se, and I was, you know. That project, unfortunately, hasn't been able to get out there in the way that they would have liked. They have tried to get into multiple film festivals. However, the editor on that just showed me that a small piece from that film actually has found its way to National Geographic about the invention of the camera phone by Philippe Kahn. It's a great little piece if you have a chance to check it out. And I do hope the film does find a home at some point. I also know there are a lot of films right now being made about Instagram and about the impact of it in people's lives, particularly in teenagers' lives. And one a friend is working on right now that looks extremely powerful and groundbreaking. And so people are really challenging and getting in deep with that subject matter in a way I find interesting and, you know, has the potential to explore this in a way and ask those questions that haven't been asked before in the way they have. And some of it is literally just showing things play out in ways that are unexpected, which I find really refreshing. Another film I've worked on, Ghosts of the Republic, I'm not even sure if that's going to be the title anymore, about surrogacy. And it follows a gay couple and their desire to have a child. They're from France. Surrogacy is illegal in France. And so they came to the U.S. where surrogacy is legal on a state-by-state basis. It's legal in Nevada. So they went to Nevada to go through the process of surrogacy. So it follows their journey. And it juxtaposes their journey up against another couple's journey. They're more activists in fighting for rights of their child who they had through surrogacy to be recognized as a French citizen. Because subsequently what happens is that these children are not recognized as French citizens. They are not recognized as the children of their parents once these people bring, these couples bring their children back to France. So clearly that's a big issue. That's a big problem. It is not necessarily in terms of resources, which is challenging. You know, they get resources, but think about identity. You know, think about one's citizenship. Think about if your child, you know, was not able to have U.S. citizenship, was not granted that, was not, what is, how much of that is part of our identity? Right now, I feel like, God, so much is going on with identity. And in particular, one thing I find really interesting is it's challenging American identity. You know, there's this whole notion of I'm personally challenging my own identity, my work identity, my career identity, and that has to do with a certain age I'm at. But there's also this disturbing nature of being American in the world right now, and I'm upset about what that means right now and how we're being viewed because of the president that we have and how things are playing out domestically as well as internationally and how that president is representing us. And how many people are claiming that hashtag, not my president, because that president inevitably becomes a reflection of who we are and how we see ourselves. And we don't want to be seen that way. I surely don't. I'm one of those people. I don't go so far as to say not my president because, you know, he actually is ours. And I'm not going to not say that. But I don't identify with him in any manner, shape, or form. And I don't want to be seen that way. And I want to do what I can to fight against that. So that leads me to another thing that was done this year. We went to the Women's March, which was a truly extraordinary and emotional experience. I've talked about it on this show before. And my partner, Hannah Leshner, and I wanted to make a documentary about it, or, you know, use that as a starting off point for a larger film. And I've gotten into these other, you know, projects as an editor and have put that on the back burner. Now I'm at a point where I don't even know what that means to make that film, or if I even want to, if I even need to. And I'm okay with that. I used to have a hard time of letting go of ideas, of processes, of projects, and I'm getting to a point where I'm okay with that. I also understand what it takes to make these things. It takes a lot of, as I told you, time and energy and focus and effort and a certain level of sacrifice, personal sacrifice, sacrifice of personal relationships and spaces. And I'm wondering, does it always have to mean that? I don't know. I'm not certain. I know that there's things that my husband and I have been dealing with because I've been spending so much time at work, and it's been really hard for us. And I'm blessed that I have an extraordinary partner. Hello, Yogi Proctor, an amazing man and a total example, who is super willing to go on this journey with me and be a real partner and ask tough questions and, you know, go into the flame of the fire and really try to face difficult situations and circumstances and try to work through them and try to integrate and try to be okay with the mess. And not many people have that in their lives, and I do, and I'm really lucky to have that, because, you know, there's some things that I find that I'm doing and avoiding, and I'm avoiding certain personal circumstances, and I'm just throwing myself into work. You know, I'm just literally throwing myself into work. And I know that in many ways, I might be justifying it, but I'm paying the bills. You know, we're in a situation where I am the breadwinner in our house, so I justify that, like, hey, I got to pay the bills. And I also totally love it. I love what I do, and I also feel like, oh, it takes that kind of dedication to make this stuff. But does it? You know, does it? Do I need to work those kinds of hours? Do I need to take that all on? And oftentimes I find myself doing that, you know, and I take on the pressure. I take on, and I try to relieve the director's anxieties and pressures. I try to relieve the producer's anxieties and pressures. And it's not always my job to do that, but I end up doing that in many ways. And I see, you know, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of tension and anxiety in that. And I'm kind of at a point where I kind of need to break away from that. And what that feels like is like I want to kind of come back down to earth. But there's also another part of me where it's like, is there a way that I can integrate my personal life with my professional life in a more effective way? One that is not maybe so lopsided. And one that acknowledges both. I mean, it's certainly a question for the ages. And one I'm going to kind of leave you guys with for a second as I play another piece. I'm going to play this from Baraka. I'm playing you music from documentaries that are purely visual. These are stunning, stunning films. If you have not seen the Kotze series, if you have not seen Baraka, please make an effort to go out and do that as soon as possible. I'm going to play you African Journey. This is awesome. This is super intense and really great. That was not African Journey. Sorry, that was something else. And just give me a second as I again try to figure this out. All right, guys, here we go. love that piece. So good. So healing. And let me tell you about a dream I had last night, since it was so crazily work-related. I was in union analysis when I was 24, 25, 26 years old. It was when I was in grad school for sociology as well. So I got really into dreams and dream analysis. And by dream analysis standards, this one is so kind of transparent, kind of wonderful. And it was literally all about kind of the last film I was working on, Ghost of the Republic, the one about surrogacy I just told you about. So what ended up happening is, little backstory before the dream. Basically the film went, you know, got up to the 9 month, kind of ironic, 9 month point. And we had a cut which we sent to TIFF, and it did not get into TIFF. And, the director, decided to, Jonathan Narducci, who I worked with before on Love Me, and, truly have a great respect for his filmmaking, and he wanted to work on it more and wanted to make it even better, you know, obviously, and I can understand that. But, you know, prior to that, you know, there was obviously some struggle. There was not obviously, but there was some struggle with finances and money, and so I also had an opportunity to get onto the Bethany Hamilton documentary, which I did. And it turned out that that project took longer than expected, as they do, as I've just described that. And so in the meantime, Jonathan was, you know, looked at his film and looked at it with some other people when it went through some other screenings and decided it needed more work than maybe the couple weeks that I was able to give him. And so they hired another editor to basically finish it up and try to get it into Sundance. And I went to, you know, came back to LA to kind of help transition that other editor in and to work on it a bit, and basically hand it off, essentially, which has been a very painful process. It's literally like, you know, in a certain way, since I don't have children, these are my children in a certain level, it was like handing over a child. And I definitely was distraught about it and upset by it. And the other editor, It was a bit difficult with him. I definitely respect him and his process, but it was messy. You know, it was a bit messy emotionally for me personally. And so, as you can imagine, but I was professional, and I tried over the years to put my emotions and feelings aside, because it's not about me. It's about the film, you know, and I definitely want the film to be the best it can be and should be and deserves to be, because it is a great film and a great film in the making. And anyway, so I had this dream last night, and I had a dream that I went back into the offices for Ghost of the Republic, and I was talking to a producer, editor type person. It wasn't actually a person who's working on the film, but he showed me a clip of the film, and the film was no longer a documentary. It was a fictional film. And I was shocked and dismayed and upset by this. And I was like, what, how could they do this to this film? You know, how could they make this choice? Why do they think this is better? You know, and I was super confused by it. And then I was kind of there, and I was hemming and hawing, and then he introduced me to two other women who were working on it. They were kind of more like editor, like assistant editor type, kind of lower level people, but, you know, not quite editor status, but working on it still. And maybe even like intern assistant editor type, but they were working really hard. And, you know, I wasn't really talking to the editor. He was kind of kept at bay, and I wasn't really talking to Jonathan. And then I was starting to have a conversation with this other editor producer type about how difficult it was for me, you know, in the process and the complexity of the emotions and the difficulty I was having with the editor they hired and things like that. And then